This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Welcome back to TVI. Carl here.
Julian here.
This is one of two episodes that are out this week. It's sort of a special episode in that it's not a comedy guest. You know, I think every guest we've ever had has been a stand-up comedian, haven't they?
Exactly. So Tony's always been a comedy character.
Yes, we've got somebody who is a funny man. But
he's a character from the manor where I grew up, East Greenwich Sides.
He's an old friend of Julian's from the old days, but he's gone on to some notoriety.
He's from the ends, mate.
He's got a book out this Christmas, and basically his name's Tony Sales, and he's a very interesting, funny guy who found himself mixed up in a life of crime, fraud. He was at one point listed as one of the biggest fraudsters in the country. So, and he's now put it all behind him. And he actually works on the other side of things. He's a fucking rosser, mate. No, he's not. He's now an advisor on fraud to like companies and the police and everything. So he stays abreast of how things are working. It's well interesting. We have a right laugh. But what I think is really good about this episode, it's the only episode I think ever we've done that people can actually take away some genuine
Any
life
help
tips
from at all.
I'd argue with the least helpful podcast out there. You will not come away with any positive life advice. If anything, you'll come away with more things to sort of, you know, to watch out
to
for.
To hate in the world, yeah.
But this one, at the end, we actually go through with Tony a list of tips from him about how you can protect yourself against fraud, and it's really fun. It's really,
it's useful,
really interesting.
I've took zero advice.
Oh, yeah. When he was telling me, I was so like doing that, doing that, doing that.
All my passwords are still 1234 and password.
Julian password 1234.
My PIN number's still 1234.
Anyway, you'll enjoy this episode because it's not just fun, but you can actually learn stuff from it, which as we learn as well. So, kick back. Thanks to all our patrons for supporting us. Sign up patreon.com/WeAreTVI.
We are TVI for the videos.
Videos of all the podcasts. You get probably 6 to 8 extra mini episodes a month. We're sorting out some merch. We're in the process of getting that sorted. There'll be a Christmas special. I think we're going to do 2 Christmas specials, one here, one for there, as well, like an extra one. But, you know, it's good stuff coming up. But in the meantime, don't worry about that. You're in for a treat. Listen to us chat to Tony Sales. Welcome back to TVI podcast. Carl Donnelly here.
Julian Dean.
And we're joined by it's one of the rarest things we do. It's not a non-comedy guest. It's not a comedian.
He is comedy though.
We've not thought let's get a comedy actor or somebody who's involved in the world of comedy. We've gone quite far off piste. For somebody once dubbed the biggest con man in the UK. Tony Sales.
Hello.
How you doing, mate? So you and Julian are acquaintances.
First time I met you actually, Tony, I was 8, right? And I was walking back from primary school.
Oh, no.
And you were smoking.
Yeah.
And I said to you, smoking's bad for you. You went, no, it's good for you. And I thought, I walked off thinking, is it? But I didn't. I was like, is it good
confidence
for you?
Confidence you need to say things with.
But you was trying to sell me.
Were you both eight? Were you both the same age?
No, he's old.
Yeah,
older
I'm a couple years older than you. I'm 46, so, Julian. Nah, so.
So what age did you start smoking?
Yeah, of course you are.
But yeah, you were trying to sell me some trick nuts off of your bike.
Oh yeah, of my little bike scams. I actually wrote about that in the book about all my little bike scams. It's quite funny.
So basically, because normally we have comedians on, like our listeners might know a bit about them or they've seen them. But for you, I suppose we should have a quick biog of, like, you know, you were somebody who was involved in the criminal underworld of what's the word? Fraud. I suppose fraud's the actual technical crime, isn't it?
Yeah.
Now you actually talk about it and you are involved in the other side of it. So what age did you start? Did you start being a bit naughty?
Well, I was lowered
3 years old.
Yeah, 7 years old. I was kind of lowered into a pub, you know, to go and open the front door. And that kind of just kicked off a criminal, you know, obsession that would last well into my 30s.
I could see how that might have some effect on your development.
Yeah, definitely. But I mean, you know, I've been branded Britain's greatest fraudster by the press, but it's not something I'm proud of, obviously, you know, but it puts bums on seats in the industry that I work in now.
Yeah, yeah.
And I just, you know, I realised that there was victims to it and got it wrong. Like, just like I said to Julian, smoking's good for you. You know, I'm socially engineering him because I want to say
now, yeah, he's like, still vaping. He's got asthma.
Sorry, it's my fault. You ain't seeing me, Julian. It's never going to happen.
What was the development of, like, it was that, and then how did it then go on to, like, escalate into, like, you actually committing fraud?
Well, I suppose in the area, I mean, if you know, we was just a wayward little crew that were always
ran the manor.
Yeah, we was ran the manor, just like kind of, you know, we was always naughty ran the manor, as Julian would tell you. I was always breaking into a car, or I was jumping off of cranes down at the Wimpy Asphalt, or whatever it was.
Yeah.
Just off key, we would just do mad stuff. And
I climbed on top of the power station once and was doing the running man on the wall. You're dead. You're dead. Yeah. It's high up.
But, you know, I dived off of that and swam across the Thames when I was a kid as well. Like, you know, doing those things, because we was just like that. We was just those kids, adventurous, I suppose.
Wimpy Asphalt was wicked down there, though, wasn't it?
Great fun. We had a proper laugh down there. You could just, you know, climb up all these sand dunes and great big piles of stones and just launch yourself off.
We were talking.
There'd always be a stolen motorbike down there that everyone would just be having turns on.
We were talking to Brennan Reese on the last episode about that thing now, because I've just recently become a dad and I'm constantly now paranoid, like, about anything that might hurt the baby. I'm so scared of, like, my wife said a really wise thing to me. She said, look at all the times when you were a kid where you almost died just doing dumb shit. Yeah. And you survive, you're fine. She said, she is going to go through this as a kid. She's going to get into naughty scrapes and all that. You've got to take, you can't worry about it all. Because,
I mean, there were kids that did die.
I mean, it does happen. I'm not saying it's out of the ordinary, but, like, in terms of the majority don't, right? Like, we were talking about things we've done where we should have, you know, climbing off bloody about hotel balconies and things, being pissed when you're 18. And it is like, you think back to when you're a kid, like, you think you were bulletproof, and actually you basically just swerved a lot of dangerous scenarios.
Yeah, and that's what happens with crime. You just end up keep doing it into your adulthood, you know. You still keep staying you're willing to take risks that most people won't, and you kind of, you know, I ended up in a big crew doing lots of different types of scams for an organization of criminality.
What was the sort of scams? Because, like, you know, it's, I think when you say scams, people don't really, I think nowadays people think it's all online stuff.
Because obviously you would have retrain as a scammer.
You know, comedy's currently on hold because of lockdown, so I'm looking to retrain.
I mean, online stuff now is all about phishing. yeah, and ransomware attacks, yeah, that's where the real serious organized criminals go.
How many people fall for those? Like, what, when you say phishing, I mean, obviously, it's a big, that's a spectrum, isn't it? It's getting an email from like, hello, I am a Nigerian prince, and there's that's probably goes right up to like genuine. Then ones where it says like,
they're not
Amazon,
real,
like,
those ones,
so well,
but they're the ones that are like your Amazon accounts being hacked,
but you know, they're designed to catch people out, right, that can't read properly, or right, a bit of greed, or just it's all those.
Julian. It's all about Julian here, right?
Yeah, they're deliberately there to trigger those emotions, right? And that's why you get rubbish ones and you get really good ones. So email and ransomware attacks happen in all different ways. If I target either of you, you can't beat me. I win. Yeah, that's it. There's nothing you can do about it. I win, because I bet neither of you have changed your password routers. So there you go. It's game over.
Don't even know what that means.
So I'm straight.
My password's always Julian Dean 80. I mean,
I keep that on air, Julian.
I keep definitely that under wraps. Do you know what I mean? Never.
I did change my password about a few years ago.
What did you change it to?
And I'm not saying I actually changed it to something that involved the weird characters and all that shit that he kept saying. For years, my passwords were so... I just picked them because I thought they're so easy to remember for me, but I realised for a hacker, they would be just easy pickings. It was literally like, it involved like my initials. I was like, are you fucking mad?
It's but like when they say your password's weak, and then like the security question is, what's your nan's name, or where were you born, or something really simple.
But yeah, so I suppose that's the modern terms. But if you would have predated like online scams, yeah. So what sort of ones were you like? What was the main ones that were kicking about back? You know,
I was more into things like mortgage fraud.
Ooh.
Like high level, you know, I rose up the ranks to be able to get to do mortgage fraud, right? So I start
What would be the ladder there? How do you develop? What would be the early ones that could
you
lead
a runner
to
at first?
Well, do you remember that petrol garage next to you? Yeah, you remember?
Yeah, me and Georgia. I forget his surname. You know him, but when we were 13, in the minute, because it was 24-hour, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
You couldn't go in the shop. Like, you had to, you know where you pay for the card through the...
We had some Rizzo with a stocking on your head.
We put stockings on our head, and the guy just knew me anyway. So it's like, we were half playing a bit, but it was like, it was funny, man. Yeah, but
years ago, they used to do Green Shield stamps in there, yeah? And they used to have like Argos Premier Points cards. So I met a guy from Greenwich who knew how to put credit card information on the back of those little cards, the Premier Point cards. And so I knew loads of people in shops. I'd just go around to the shops and say, swipe this through, we get a bit of cash back. They'd swipe it through for 100 quid, give me 50 quid. And then it just kind of snowballed. I then bought my own machines to get my own numbers. When up the creek was 302,
I remember that. It was under 18's nightclub.
Yeah.
It's a comedy club now. Me and Cole play it. Yeah. But
yeah. So one of the girls that worked in there, she actually had a job uptown in a deli. And I kind of got talking to her, gave her a grab bar, and she went in and worked in a shop and got me a load of credit card information on day one. And that kind of set me on my way. But I kind of dipped in and out of crime for ages. Like, I'd get a load of money, and then I'd want to be straight, and I'd just go and live this straight life, just trying to be normal, you know, fit into society.
Selling drugs or something, like, legit, you know what I mean?
Yeah, just kind of, yeah, up in my... I actually went and worked in Curry's.
Rich pickings for getting those credit card details. So.
Your
side project on the go at the same time.
Exactly. And that's like, you learn the internal stuff then, and you learn about the finances and how it all works. And then it just snowballed and just went up the ladder.
So after credit cards, how many, is there other things you do in between that and mortgage?
So I mean, I ripped off like, I've done a couple of criminals once. Let me just plug my laptop in because it's... been traveling everywhere. I'm actually not on lockdown, which is great.
Where are you now?
I'm actually at home, but I've only just walked through the door because Julian's lastminute.com and all that. I ripped off some other criminals. I would I had a guy that could get Moody watches. Yeah. And I figured out that in one particular jeweler's, you could go in and ask him for a credit agreement printout. So it would just be like what the finance would look like on a certain watch and how much you would pay. But it looked like an actual receipt.
Yeah.
So I just kind of would go and find the watch that I could get a receipt for in the shop window, pair them all up, and then go and sell them to people. And I mean, I've done one guy for 150 grand's worth once.
Oh my God.
It was only 100 grand's worth of watches, but he threatened to kill my mum. So he found out months later. So I tucked him up with like 100 grand's worth of watches. I'd done him for a month for 10 grand a week first. Watches, yeah. The guy that I know works in the jewellers, he's going to have it off. He's just going to nick them. Do you want all of them? Yeah, you can have all of them for 50 grand. Gave him all the stuff. He never saw me. I'd done it all over the phone and just used the runner to go and do the stuff, right? So, but the runner that I used was my brother-in-law. And so when Christmas comes and goes, the birthdays come and go, sitting there, money's all gone now. Yeah, like, my phone rings and it's my little sister. And she's like, this guy has just come to the house. You better call the number. So he'd been round to my sister's, beating up my brother-in-law, smashed the granny out of my brother-in-law to find out who I was. He'd then given my mum's address, and the guy had gone to my mum, showed up at my mum's, and he just said to me, when I rung him, he just said, you got 24 hours, son, to bring the money back, otherwise I'm going to kill your mum.
Oh, my God. That's...
So I just said, kill her.
What did you spend the money on?
You said kill her and jumped on a plane.
I said kill her and I put the phone down.
No, did you really?
Yeah, because...
That is a bold...
The thing is this, though, yeah, if you're really involved in crime, right...
They'd just do it, innit? Oh, what was that? Do you not? Would there be that thing?
Kill
of,
my mum.
They'd do it. You're not talking without to me. Calling
you. Exactly. Yeah, or you're going to grab her and you're going to say, "Listen, smart ass, I've got your mum.
Yeah.
You better come and bring the money for the watches back, and I'll give you your mum back. Yeah. Don't worry, she'll be looked after. That's how it's going to be. Yeah.
Cup of tea.
Yeah, but he didn't. Once he thought he was brave balls. Yeah, he was going to kill my mum, and I just didn't have it. And so I went and see one of my friends, who probably
still mates with him.
With the guy I sold the watches to. Definitely not.
We should block him on Facebook, man.
Did you at any point inform your mum that she was involved in this discussion?
Do you know what? I actually read so with my book coming out, I had to go and read some bits to my mum, right?
Mum, just so you know, I did use you as collateral.
I kind of used this.
You've got your own chapter, mum.
Yeah. And like, so my sister
your
was
life
obviously...
Is in
you were heading up South East London's crime gang, mum. You do know.
But yeah, so what was the first...
Yeah, that was it, really. I told her. She was fine with it.
How did that confrontation end with that guy? You obviously called his bluff. How does it then go from there?
So my mate rings my phone again. Yeah. So yeah. By this time I'm with my mate, and my mate just answers the phone and tells him his name. Yeah. And says, you better go and find out about me. Yeah. Just go and ask around. You'll find out. And puts the phone down. And 10 minutes later, the guy rung back saying, look, man, I don't want no trouble, man. I'm just in the middle. God. I'm really sorry. Like, I'm really sorry. So my mate just said to him, listen, you've got 24 hours to go and get the money. Otherwise, I'm going to kill your mum and put the phone down on him. And they paid.
Was it Mother's Day or something?
Yeah. It might have been. So, yeah.
We just used to cuss our mums. Mum cusses.
Oh, Julian was murder, man. He was always cutting. He's always had that cutting thing about him. Yeah, no one wanted to mess with Julian. He was little, but his mouth was dangerous.
Oh yeah. I've got to edit this podcast, so I know that full well. That signs I've got to edit out some horror show that he's... but yeah, so that was... I mean, it's mad to think. But so how long did you... Obviously, you must... What was the turning point when you thought, I should probably start binning this off?
I went through... There was a couple of points that I went through, you know. Once I'd got caught for... We was doing a shopping centre up in Sheffield, just getting plasma screen TVs and stuff, right? And we got caught. They took the team down. And whilst in the cell... The police officer came down and said, I've got a lady upstairs crying her eyes out. And I said, I haven't stolen no lady's identity. I'm a man. Like, I've only been using my men's stuff. She said, yeah, but you stole her dead dad's. And it's just brought up all the memories. And that kind of was like the first realization of whoa, there's victims to this. Up until that point, I've only looked at IDs with my faces on it or the people that are working for me's faces. So that gave me like a real kind of, because I'm just selfish at that point. I don't care about nothing else. I'm just worried about me.
Yeah, yeah.
And that really kind of triggered it. And then once I then got sentenced for that one, jump bail, went on the run as a fugitive for 6 years.
Where did you go?
I stayed here in the UK.
Right. Let's keep it simple.
I'm good at making IDs. So
It
was quite easy to, you know, I made like a, so I made a taxi badge, you know, like a black cab badge. Right.
60s on the run, just doing knowledge.
Yeah. So exactly what I've done. Yeah. So I made a black cab's badge and what they call a bill. Yeah. Black cab drivers have to have a bill and it has all like little bits of fiber in it. Yeah. So I cut up all these little bits of fiber and glued them all to the paper properly. And I went and rented a black cab and went out picking up people off. Yeah. While I was on the run to
fucking hell. That is.
Yeah. It's funny. Yeah, but it was like a honest living.
It was that guy in Greenwich years ago. I don't know if it's a myth or not, but someone stole a bus. Do you remember that? And they did the bus route
in the book, Julian.
They did the
Stuart Toll. It was.
Yeah, that was it. And he stole a bus, but did the bus route on the stops and stuff.
That's mental.
Yeah, I'm so glad you said it. You know, I'm so glad that, like, because you know when you're writing it, I'm like, did that really happen? Wow.
Oh, is that in your book? Yeah,
it's in the book. Yeah, because Stuart was one of like my first idols that I looked at and was kind of like, you know, he was the next level up for me. You know, around Greenwich, you know what it was like, Julian. It's kind of like there's different groups of kids all over the place, and they were just that level up where they were into proper naughty shit. And that was, you know, not that I continued to do any naughty shit with them, just done a few cars, nicked a few cars, because they weren't really that naughty, really, in comparison to some of the other guys that I would then go and get around, you know, like, but yeah.
So after 6 years on a run, what happened then? Did you get caught?
Yeah, I finally get caught in a petrol garage in Basildon, meeting one of my other mates.
You were managing it at the time with a fake ID.
Well, I actually get out and say to the copper, like, I give him the moody name and all that, yeah, and smoking weed. I was stinking of weed, yeah. Nah. So, but he didn't even mention the weed. He just goes, there's two warrants out for that name, and just straight enough, I'm got, like, yeah.
And then what was the fallout of that charge?
So they then so I only ended up getting 12 months for that sentence. Because one of the guys that was in the conspiracy with us, he got he tested for cancer, and so the judge had gone lenient on him as he was the only one that showed up to court as well. All the others of us, we all jumped bail. Yeah, all my other codees. Then a couple of years later, they caught one of my other codees and he got given 2 years, 8 months. So the judge had set a precedent between giving one guy 18 months probation and one guy 2 years, 8 months. And when I just got in the dock, I just told him, you know, my wife was pregnant at the time with my first daughter. I had three boys up until that point, and I just didn't want to miss that bonding period. You know, like when you know now. When you have a kid, you want to kind of... You need that bonding period. Yeah, I didn't want to miss that. It was really important. And at that time, I didn't know I was going to get 12 months. Otherwise, it would never, ever have run. But once you run, it then becomes really difficult to go and give yourself in and go, oh, I'm going to go away from my family now. It becomes difficult, right? And so that was it. I was caught. And then when in jail, my wife come to visit me finally after 3 months. She finally started talking to me again.
Oh, really?
She's holding my son's hand as she walks in, and he was just crying.
Oh,
and I just said, what's up with him? And she said, what the fuck do you think's up with him? Like,
what prison were you in?
I was in Doncaster.
Oh, fuck.
Yeah, so it was right up north as well. Funny jail, though. Like, there's some really good stories in there of the book, things that happened and all that, like, are hilarious. We've done some really funny stuff in there because you just have to get on with it. But I knew that coming out, I knew that I didn't want to go back into that life. And, you know, I also knew that I don't want to work in the supermarket.
Yeah.
I don't want to, you know, I'm just not that type of person. But I have a really good brain for figuring out how to attack a company or how to socially engineer someone to steal their identity. So maybe I thought there was something I could do, and you know, here I am today.
So yeah, you do, like, you're basically, you do talks and stuff, and you help the other side now, people to protect themselves.
I'm lucky, I've got some really big clients, you know.
Does that mean you have to always stay on the sort of,
you've
got the latest trend, the latest
thing? You've always got to be aware. Like, it's that thing of like, it's like you hung up your boots, but then you've got to constantly train, even though you're not doing it.
Yeah, like, and it takes, so, you know, I, most days of the week, I rob banks for a living, and you know, I have my
own. Don't say it on here. Police will find out.
Well, they can find out because we're legally allowed to do it. So nowadays, like, my business partner is the ex-head of fraud, ex-head of counter terrorist financing for the Metropolitan Police.
Yeah.
And I've got like a guy who's worked in Hollywood as my business partner. He's worked in Hollywood for 8 years as a top film editor. Yeah, who's done 30 years in the BBC. Like, we've got masses of credibility, and then we bring hackers into the mix, along with a criminal mindset. And now the understanding of how data is, so from a kid being able to get those credit cards or go and do sponsorship forms and obtain people's information, it gives us like a real powerful insight into what happens today, you know, and that makes us quite unique.
Has it got easier, or what is like, has the internet made it easier to nick money off people? Has it made it hard?
Yeah, I mean, it just intensified everything. You can... You know, you can steal money off people without them even knowing.
I suppose, yeah, that is...
And that's that, you know, most people won't even know that you stole money off them. You know,
I didn't really... I once got someone, I don't know, some my debit card or something got done, and I didn't have a clue. I don't check my online bank I check it once a week or something. So it wasn't until I got a phone call from the bank saying, have you just bought £1,500 worth of books in Dubai? I was like, no, I'm afraid I haven't.
I don't think so. Let me look at the diary. No, I was having a cup of tea in London this morning.
Well, yeah, so like, it's a thing of, yeah, I suppose.
I got done just before, at the beginning of lockdown one, I got done. It was only like about £600. But my bank was good though. They just put it back in my bank within like 24 hours and then investigated it. It was quite handy.
Yeah.
But it's fucking annoying, man.
But they've got, I suppose,
changed now.
What the banks have?
They have to do that now. What Julian said, they have to put the money back in and then investigate it. Yeah, and then it's found to be, they have to do that because it was just becoming out of control.
Do they have like a sort of what's the word where, you know, they've got almost an allowance in mind, the banks, that they've put aside for the amount that's going to get nicked off their customers?
Yeah.
They've almost got a slush fund.
All companies.
Well, it's just numbers, I guess, isn't it? It's not like 2%. It's just numbers on a computer to them, isn't it, really, I suppose?
Yeah, it's 2%. They factor in 2% for losses.
Is that what it is?
Oh, do they? Yeah.
Yeah, they do this. And we all
2%
average...
doesn't sound a lot, but when you actually blow it up to the real amount of money.
Well, they've probably got, they're billions and hundreds of billions.
I think last year it cost 140 trillion globally fraud. If you think that's well over the 2% of losses, that's just what's reported. Fuck, yeah, what about what's not reported? Yeah, like, we're into mega figures. It's huge.
Fucking hell. It's the biggest industry in the world, isn't it?
It is.
Fraud.
It is.
Nicking other people's money.
Have you seen the thing today in the news about the PPE scandal? The government, basically, there was like, you know, sort of at the start of lockdown, the government basically dished out all these contracts for people to sort out PPE and looking for vaccines and all that, and there was loads of just shady shit going down then. People just, one bloke got $22 million or pounds as a go-between to sort out a contract with a PPE, and he's just a private bloke who's basically brokering a deal, and it turns out the PPE they got, most of it hasn't even been used, and it's basically just, I think there was such a gold rush of people going, right, the government are spitting out money to try and sort of find a way of navigating through this.
Well, bounce back loans are going to be the one, aren't they?
That's because what me and Julian talked about.
We're going to find out. Yeah,
I got a big really one. I got a big one, and I gave it back. I was like,
"You've never said, you haven't told her." Oh, listen,
I haven't said that. No, I got a hefty one, and I was like, I didn't want to, you know, write it off, or I didn't want to pay it back, and I just thought, I don't need to get into debt.
Because how is that going to work? Most of it
was so, it came just so quick.
Yeah. It was, because I got a little one just as a little safety net for during lockdown, but like, it was so easy that it was like, this is going to be, it's so many people are just going to have this and then default on it. You can default on it because it's underwritten by the government.
Yeah, and I think they'll all probably end up turning into grants or something. I think they're going to have to, because if you think of how many businesses once, because loads of business just go, yeah, I'll take the 50 grand.
Of course.
And they're just going to spend it. They've never had 50 grand in the business in their life, but they've inflated the figures massively to get
they're
the 50
little
grand.
Sunday market stall selling.
Yeah, exactly. Selling I'll make 50 grand a week, mate. It's just. But that underpins the society. That underpins the currency. That underpins, like, you know, our whole economy.
That's it. That's why I think sometimes, like, you know, when you're talking about fraud, like, I do think there's a difference, but like morally. Between nicking, you know, people that go in and fucking defraud an old lady, telling her they're going to sort out her double glazing, and suddenly they've run out of all the money that's under her bed and shit. Like, that's a totally different beast to ripping off a bank. I don't care what anyone says, you know. They are not on the same moral level, you know. So I think definitely. You know, I think that's why. Yeah,
it's almost like you're outsmarting the bank. I mean, you're playing with the bank. Like, they're doing that, aren't they, on a sort of corporate level?
One is nicking literal money off an individual, and one is a system. I think you're trying to work out. But not that I'm saying I know how. I'm not doing it. I don't know how. I've not got the know-how. I'm an idiot. But, yeah, I mean, it is. I do think there's people, you can't hear, when sometimes people just hear the word fraud and they think it's all the same, innit? But it ain't.
I'm all right, bro. Yeah, like in Greenwich, because you get like the one-way system, the kind of upper class side of it, and then East Greenwich is kind of, you know, around Dyson House and around there, isn't it? Like Glen.
Yeah, I say about it in the talks. I say, like, unfortunately for like the financial institutions around the world, I was born in the poor part. So you've got kind of like in between, and where you was, Julian, obviously you're right slap bang in the middle, really, just before you get to the really nice.
It's just
part.
On the edge, isn't it? Yeah. I mean, it was just on the edge near the Royal College and all that. Yeah.
Because I for a period when I was growing up, I lived in Croydon, just outside Croydon, and we lived in a pub. My uncle owned a pub. Me and my parents moved in, and it was that exact idea of, like, it was on the corner. It was on a roundabout, and one side of it was Shrublands Estate, which is a rough estate, and literally the other side of it was like nice sort of, you know, just middle class housing. And there was two bars in the pub, the public bar and the saloon bar. And it was almost like, you know, people wouldn't even come in the other bar. They'd come in one door from Shrublands into the public bar, and the other lot would come in the sort of middle class people would come in the saloon bar. And it was only like one couple from Shrublands who drink in the saloon bar. And it was just fucking like meeting of worlds. It was unbelievable. It was like you're talking a matter of 50 meters, and it was two different worlds. And on the one on the saloon side, there was loads of police officers lived on a row of houses over the road. So they'd all be in there, and in Shrubland, literally the other side of a wall in the public bar, there'd be people fucking hocking stolen goods and stuff. But it was amazing to watch it. You forget, that's the thing I think London's got more probably than anywhere else in the world, is you can have that. You can have basically a posh area, and one road comes, and then you're in the rough bit, innit?
Yeah,
definitely.
Yeah, that's exactly what happens. And I think, like, when you get the interaction between the kids and all that as well, like, you know, it's just like what Julian said, you know, saying to Julian that smoking's good as a kid. But you have to look at the social dilemma with that, right? So look at what my parents are doing, and look at what his parents are doing, because that's where we all learn stuff from.
Yeah.
It's not, you know, everything that we do is learnt behaviour. Every single move that we make is all what we've learned to do. So as a kid saying that to Julian, I believe, because I see the adults around me smoking and it's not a problem to them, that I might smoke. In fact, it might be all right that I'm a bit naughty.
Also a class thing involved in that. Like, you know, I think middle class people, not even middle class smokers, as parents, I knew kids whose parents smoked, who were middle, like from quite nice middle class backgrounds, who their parents were really strict on them not smoking. Whereas I was from a family, and like I knew loads of like mates from rough backgrounds, and like our parents didn't really give a shit. Like if you got caught smoking when you were 12 or 13, they sort of expected it almost. Like, so I do think there was a different thing of like, you just realized that you knew it was wrong, probably like health wise, but you just didn't think there was anything particularly wrong with starting that young.
Well, I think that the middle classes know, don't they? They've got the education to know that that's not good for you. And we found out, and we're addicted, but we're not going to let that happen to our kids. Whereas the working classes don't find that information out, because that's what all class is, right? essentially. Yeah, if you look back to books and reading and what it was many years ago, it was who had knowledge, and that's all it was. So if you know the stuff that could, if you hurt yourself, you could give yourself a rub from the grass that they'd made. You had that knowledge passed down, right? That's just what it is. And so that's why the internet's a great thing, because we can learn so much stuff.
And also, we can also learn so much bollocks as well. Exactly. As we've learned through coronavirus. No, what I was going to say was, so when you moved into like the other side of things, but now, what would you, if you had to like think of like to the layman, to somebody like me or Julian, if you said to us, here's the things in your actual person or in your life you need to probably tighten up so you don't get done, what would be the main like top ones?
So I'd say the first thing that you should do is at home. We all have a
gun under your pillow.
Probably great.
Baseball bat with nails sticking out.
You're only going to shoot your screen, and that could end up to a deflection of the bullet on yourself. So probably not a good idea. And shooting down cables don't work. I've tried it. you should change your password on your home router. Yeah. So if you think of your home router as your doorway, you wouldn't just leave it open without locks, would you?
With the password that came with it, basically. Change
the crazy
it
one that's always like little u, exactly. Big x.
Exactly. Yeah. So you can do this by just going to your laptop or your PC and just type in your IP address, bring up all your router information, and then just go to change password. Yeah. It's a very quick step. It will lock anyone out who's trying to get into your home.
Because how easy is it for then somebody to bust into your router?
Well, unless you're going online every time behind, I'm probably the only one out of us lot that's behind a VPN.
That is true. Right?
So everyone can see who you are and where you are. Yeah.
Right.
I've got a VPN. I'm in my virtual private network, which means that no one can see me unless they're hacking me. And perhaps there's a chance they could break the VPN. But the likelihood of that happening while we're live is virtually none.
They'd probably come up against a little bit of security and just move on, because most people haven't got one. They'd just try something that's easier, wouldn't they?
Exactly. And it's all a numbers game. It's not a person sitting there going like that. It's a bit of kit that they've got.
It's
out
like a burglar's not going to burgle the most secure house. He's going to burgle next door. That's a bit easier, isn't it?
Exactly. It's the same thing. So, you know, that's kind of a couple of things straight away. And then your device, you know, this is a computer.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, oh, I'm just flicking a bit now.
Just went invisible there.
Yeah.
Hey, this is invisible. This is the iPhone 20.
Go that way. Hey, that's better. If you go with one of these, this is a computer, right?
Yeah.
So unless you've got virus software on now,
it's
vulnerable. Because every time you go out and connect to a mast, right, your IP address goes ping to that mast and it pings back to the phone. So now if I want to search for you, I can just look for all the IP addresses that are pinging at the tower at the top of Shooter's Hill there. Yeah. Hey, who have I got? Take all these IP addresses that are not hidden. Thank you. Let's have a little sift through. Yeah. So you should definitely
do a bit of Christmas shopping.
Yeah, exactly.
So what would you say? You should have a VPN on your phone at all times as well.
You should definitely be on a VPN and have security on your phone. Every time you go on the internet, right?
Yeah.
Unless you have a VPN, it's like going outside naked.
I also do that, though.
Well, some people like the risk.
You know, I just like getting some air to my bits. But yeah. I know what you mean. Yeah, all right. That's VPNs on every device.
Every device. As soon as you're connecting to the internet, yeah? And then be aware of what people send you. So at the moment, for instance, you have loads of videos doing the rounds on Facebook that people just get sent to them, right?
Yeah.
And they'll just click a link. Like, they'll just click the video, I can make that video have malware in it. And when you click it, I'm going to steal all the information that's in your phone.
Yeah.
And I'm going to steal all your mates' information and share it on your page, get all your mates to click it as well, right? It's just malware. Like, you have to be sure before you click on a link.
And if they send 20,000 of those out, there's going to get a percentage that will click on it.
Numbers game. Always going to be about numbers. Yeah. Like, they don't care that they send 20,000. If they get one, it's a good day for them.
20,000 could be one hit on enter, couldn't it?
Yeah.
And basically, malware is the thing that once it's on your computer, it can pick up on your passwords that you're putting into things.
So look, there's a lot of stuff going around at the moment where we hear people saying, I say stuff and it comes up on my phone.
Yes.
Right? So that doesn't happen.
I quite like that, though.
Doesn't happen, by the way,
does it not?
It don't happen, because all it is that we all accept cookies, right? Yeah. So when we join Facebook, when we join Insta, when we join Zoom, And all these companies in the background share the data they have. They sell it to each other. Because they want to learn more about us. But the amazing thing about computers are they can take all that data and just formulate it. Yeah. So now they've got an amazing and go, right, Carl, look, I'm going to target you with that. Julian, I'm going to target. I know Julian likes yellow covers. Yellow covers. But because we talk about this stuff that we like, we instantly relate it to, oh my God, it's on my phone. But we forget that even if you're not searching for stuff, your friends and the people, the contacts in your phone, it's all cookies. It all interacts to a big computer. It's not a little bloke working it out going, ah, this happens in seconds.
I saw a funny thing about, like, you know, there's this weird hippie thing where there's this significance with the number 1111. Like hippies say, like, it's a magical number. And there's like, so you always see people, sometimes you see like people that are like into horoscopes and shit online going, oh God, once again, I looked on my phone, it was 1111. It means that the gods are looking out for me.
Somebody's going to happen once a day,
what,
isn't it?
Somebody said, what you mean when you look at your phone that you look at 8 hours a day, you might catch it at 1111. It's like, we forget. So we always read significance.
A broken clock works once a day.
Well, that's it. I think our nature is to read significance into coincidences because it makes it feel like
we like patterns
and exciting going.
And it's absolutely impossible, of course, for your brain to remember everything exactly the way it happened to you.
Yeah, definitely.
So you add stuff to it naturally without even realizing it.
That's
right?
Why when there's like an accident and there's like three witnesses or 10 witnesses, it's all different versions of it.
Yeah.
It's also why the police say I was standing by a lamppost, because they're relating the stuff that's around them to give them the memory bits that tweak it. So it's just training, isn't it?
So it's more just but you've got to accept cookies, haven't you, to join certain websites?
You do, but I mean, so I'll go on and I'll go through the cookie policies and switch off the ones that I don't. I mean, it
only
can take
person
ages.
In the world is Reddit, I think.
Well, most people that understand what cookies are, because all cookies is malware.
Do I
want to be targeted by Wish selling me a pair of knickers with a willy O on it? Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. The
I can't speak for everyone,
no.
But I would like.
Go out.
I don't need any more of those. That's for sure.
To add to my collection.
So you know, and that's kind of what happens, and it's only going to get bigger, badder, stronger, faster.
Like
the more sites, because you know, there's so Instagram's getting old now. Facebook's getting old. YouTube's probably on the down now. Yeah, there's not as many people going to it for sure now. TikTok's starting to be the next biggest thing.
I hate that place.
Me too. I've never been on it. Never actually ever been on it at all. But, you know, the new generations that are coming through and us older generations are getting bored of it now. We're kind of like, it's not as good as we is. We've had to do it so much over lockdown that it's more. We want to get out and do other stuff. So
real world, isn't it?
Yeah, getting the real world. People say that COVID's going to change the way society acts. Let's hope that might actually make us interact better with each other a few years from now.
Maybe in a few years. I think at the minute it's still just causing more fucking arguing, isn't it? I find it every day you wake up, there's a new argument about something between people. But
well, it's because we're all confused, isn't it?
But I think people have got more time on their hands. You put mixed boredom with having nothing to do and having people spend more time online all day. It's going to just create that sort of pot of everyone just digging each other out. So it's hard. So I'm just trying to work out a list. It's good for our listeners to learn. Get a VPN on your devices.
So
check the cookies avoid the cookies as much as possible.
Yeah, and I don't just go clicking on links, on videos.
Yeah, that is, I do. I think that is one I've always been quite wary of.
Yeah, I've actually.
There was
been
that tax one that was going round a few months ago.
Well, there's one at the minute. Who got busted? There's a comedian who got a phone call a few weeks ago, and she got done by a tax scam where it's basically with a HMRC, you're due a payment on your account. You know, you're overdue, you're going to get fined if you don't pay it today. And they had loads of information that sounded so legit. She ended up paying over the phone.
Well, it's the Jimmy thing as well, isn't it? So it's relatable, right? Taxes, right? It's related. If I'm a criminal, what's the criminal case study that I can look at to target other same people? Oh, look, Jimmy Carr got done. Look.
Yeah,
Look, you just never know. And you just put
the
under fear.
But I think that thing of like, you know, I understand it. They basically threatened. They were saying like, you know, this is already overdue. You're going to, it's either going to be a big fine or a court, you know, you're going to bailiffs at your house essentially.
Mm.
And it's just that thing of they just constantly hit the fear until that person just pays on the, like on the phone. And I think the biggest thing, I mean, that would be like, I don't know much about it, but I would say never pay over the phone for anything.
Yeah. I never, unless you've called them. Unless you initiate the call,
unless you're
expecting the call or you initiate the call, then you definitely shouldn't be giving any information.
Like your bank would never ring you and ask for your bank details, would they?
And if they do, put the phone down,
But they do ask you security questions, though. And I think that's one that sets people's alarm bells going, because it does sound dodgy, them going, like it's HSBC, and all of a sudden they say, like, can you provide what's your name and date of birth? And part of you does think this could be dodgy, this.
Like, no one ever looks at it from the bank's point of view, though, right? But if you're a bank, you want to talk to your customers, right?
Yeah.
You want to tell them that, look, fraud's happening, and you want to be able to talk them and guide them through. But for a bank, it's kind of nearly impossible now
to get
secure communications between their client and that person, because unfortunately, we've all got to have a suspicious mindset.
Yeah, definitely. That's the thing. I think that's the sad thing, but it's also... I'm somebody who's like, I try not to be cynical about anything. I try and be as open as possible, because I don't like cynicism, but I do think, you know, in terms of like, protecting your shit, you've got to
be aware of the bad things in the world, haven't you? Like, you wouldn't like let a 9-year-old girl walk home at midnight on her own. And it's the same. It's just the internet is like just accentuated how people can get you.
You've got to be
I always tell people to always think of it as a window outside your house that everyone's always looking into.
So wherever
you are online, people can always see that. Be aware of what you're posting and how you're posting it and what you're putting out about yourself, you know. I always say that what are some other ones? Your passwords are like your virginity. Never give them away to anyone. You know, not unless it's that special person that you trust who's not going to just take advantage of that. Because
should you change your passwords regularly?
Regularly, definitely. But see, also, that's one I think
people just don't use a what? Password manager.
Password manager. Make sure that you go and get a 5 or 4.5-star rated password manager.
Ah.
I don't endorse any, but you should definitely get one because they definitely work, you know, and it's. It makes it a lot more harder for a hacker to crack a database that's protected massively.
And
as long as you're storing those passwords in your manager, you can always get them. Random words for passwords as well. Don't ever use anything that's familiar to yourself. So, you know, looking around my room, mirror, door, telly. Totally random. 1913. That's it. No relevance.
A couple of passwords.
I'm going to have that as a password from now on. Then. I mean, you can't be too careful. Do you know what I mean?
I think that would be one I reckon people are the most lazy about changing. Yeah. I'm guilty of it. I change passwords quite regularly because I'm really bad at forgetting passwords. So I end up just by the nature of my own forgetfulness, I have to change them. But I think there's some people I know that wouldn't have changed the password in.
Well, here's the thing, if you think that personally it's a bad thing, there's Equifax who are the world's biggest holder of personal information, credit files, in fact, right?
Yeah.
One server in Argentina, didn't have the password changed. The password was password 123.
Wow. Oh, shit.
And they lost 140 million people's personal credit files just through that one mistake. Yeah. So it's not just people that make mistakes, it's companies too, right? Yeah,
that hacker thought it just struck gold password in.
Yeah.
Let's try password 123. I bet he almost didn't even try it. You know? Like, what's the guy's maiden name? Yeah. Looking at all this shit.
Yeah.
Password 123, and it just opens. He's like,
I've just got the case, you know, the keys.
That's a good day at work, wasn't it? At the
in the
fraudster's
farm.
Office.
Yeah, but in you know, that probably cost them in excess of 50 million quid to sort out, right? So it costs them money too, and they get fined for it. They get massive fines for losing all that information.
But and people will lose faith in them as well, won't they? And
stuff. Yeah, it damages their reputation. Don't know if you've got a choice
to use them or not, but you'll go with someone else, won't you?
But you should never worry about that either. Yeah. So like, I'm actually going to start talking about this soon. I haven't spoke about this before, but I think it's really important that we all start to understand that getting hacked is going to happen.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter how good you are. Doesn't matter how on the ball you are. I've been hacked. I'm seriously on the ball, yeah? But, of course, if someone sends me an email that I think is from someone I know, they've been hacked, that now leads me to get hacked, right? So if I then return this email to Julian saying, Julian, look at this. Yeah. I found this. It'd be really good for your podcast. Get this person on next week. Look at him. You're going to click the link.
Yeah.
You click the link. Even if you click it in a week or two, you're going to click it, right? Once you click it, I've got you. And that's where all of us can be got, and we shouldn't be worried about it in that way, because everyone's going to get got. It's just how it is.
Definitely. But there we go. That's good. So like, I think we've got to wrap it up in a minute, because I've got to
tell you what, you can actually go and see you can go and check and see if your email address has been done. Yeah.
Really?
There's a website called Have I been pwned.com. It's like a hacking word for them, but you just literally put your email address in and it will go red or green and tell you if you've been hacked or not, and tell you can look and see what database it was found in and stuff like that. So,
and then change your passwords. So that would be like the takeaway for our listeners, I would say, is that the two
change
the main
your
things,
name and move
get offline, go live in the woods,
get
off grid.
Change your passwords, make them obviously more difficult. I do think people are lazy with that. Get a VPN for your things, and
don't click on links.
That's easily rememberable things, I think.
Great stuff.
Quickly, we've got a few minutes left. So you've actually written a book about all this?
Yeah, I've written a book about the stuff that I've done and the stuff I do now.
Yeah,
I've actually got I actually get the first pilot episode of my life story that's been done by BBC Studios USA.
Oh, cool.
I get the draft script, I think, in the next couple of weeks. So there's
who's
lots
playing
of stuff
me?
Not sure yet, Julian. Danny DeVito's out.
I was thinking of Robert Downey Jr. You know what I mean?
Yeah, when he was back on crack in the 90s. But is the book out, or is it soon?
The book comes out on the 17th of December. It's called The Big Con. Go buy it.
Christmas,
please.
Lovely Christmas reading, guys.
Lovely Christmas reading.
Put your feet up Christmas Day and read about fraud.
That's it.
But that's cool. How long did it take you to write it?
I had a ghostwriter write part of it, and then it took me 3 months once the ghostwriter had given me his bit to fill in all the gaps.
How does that work? You literally just sit with them and you tell them everything. They just make all the notes. Well, obviously, they would probably record it now and listen back.
Yeah, they record it and then type it all up into to a manuscript. And then you kind of read it all through of what the stuff was. I mean, the first bit I got was terrible. I had to oh my God, like everyone's going to hate me. Because he just missed out like loads of detailed bits, you know, they get more carried away with some of the exaggerating some of the other bits and not really coming back to what I'm not about sensationalizing crime. Yeah. It's not about that.
No.
I do a lot of work not to do that. So it's about understanding it.
Well, I was going to say, that's definitely going to be, that would be quite common, I think, from if somebody's telling a story that is about crime and they're looking at it from a perspective of, this is me now, I used to do this, and I want to talk about the change. And a writer's probably instinct is to make it fun and exciting, like, no, let's turn it into fucking Lock, Stock or something.
Yeah,
so I reckon
exactly.
That probably happens quite a lot with...
What about some of the guys you used to sort of be with doing that? Have they kind of turned their back on you a bit, or are they, you're not naming them, I assume, obviously, but like,
yeah, no, I don't name anyone.
Was there any hassles with that side of it?
There was a couple of little bits of hassle, but I was able to just kind of have conversations with people about stuff and just change bits that they didn't like, or
yeah
and we went through it kind of with a fuck, because you've also got to keep it away so no one can find out who it is or when it happened.
There's
a whole load of stuff that you have to do, but there's no names in it, but everyone's happy with their bits in it, I wrote about it, and just say it is what it is. I've just kind of just tried to tell my life story, really.
And you're going to be sending them a nice signed copy for Christmas.
Yeah, nice signed.
Click on this link for the signed copy.
Link's here.
Cool. That was wicked, man. It was really interesting.
Yeah, great. Good to talk to you,
nice one, Tony. Good to see you, man.
And our listeners,
good to see you
too, I'm sure, man. We'll be glad to have those tips.
Great. I look forward to coming and seeing you both when all this lockdown stuff's over and you're doing a show somewhere. Definitely.
Yeah, definitely, man.
If that ever happens, the way things are going. Hopefully December we'll be back doing some gigs. I'm doing Up the Creek in December, actually.
Oh, yeah. Oh, really? Wow.
I think I currently am, if it actually opens.
I've got my launch there on the 9th.
Oh, really? Oh, it's cool. I mean, I'm sure I'm there in December.
Yeah, I've got my book launch there on the 9th.
Oh, quality.
I'm there on the 11th
and 12th.
Oh, wow, that's mad. If I can get tickets, I'm going to come then, definitely.
All right, cool, good. Man.
Great stuff.
All right, mate. Well, take it easy.
You take
good
care,
luck,
guys.
Good luck with the book.
All right, thanks very much.
Take care, Tony. See you
later. Bye, Julian. See you later, Cole.
Bye, mate. See you, mate.
We're actually changing the podcast.